valiant and brave hypno pioneer, Marie Mickey Mongan, because it's one of the most powerful uses of hypnosis, and it is one of the areas I am most passionate about. We discussed earlier the use of hypnosis instead of anesthesia for dental procedures and cancer treatments. Now, with that in mind, allow your imagination to run wild with just how effective hypnosis could be during childbirth. A calm, peaceful birth is possible. As my hypnobirthing instructor and mentor, Dr. Vivian Keeler, told me, what if the day you give birth is the best day of your life? Imagine looking forward to a birthing experience that is filled with peace, comfort, and joy, rather than dreading a birth filled with the stress, fear, and pain that we've been conditioned to believe is inevitable. There's more to giving birth than just the physical act of getting the baby out. There is an emotional and spiritual aspect that far outweighs the physical. Giving birth without fear and surrounded by love and calm results in a feeling of powerful accomplishment and infinite joy. All of this and more is possible with hypnobirthing. I've always felt that the lack of widespread access to hypnotherapy is a human rights issue, and I believe that bringing babies into the world might be where this issue is the most acute. If you or your partner are bringing a baby into the world anytime soon, I highly recommend spending some time researching hypnobirthing and watching a handful of success story videos. You might want to keep a box of tissues nearby. Happy parents with happy, healthy babies always set off my waterworks. Dissecting the tree. Something as profound as pregnancy and childbirth can naturally bring a supercharged magnifying glass to all areas of one's life, including outward habits, day-to-day stress, and subconscious beliefs. It is a crucial time to take stock of the conditioning that has led us to where we are and the conditioning we will need to become the kind of parents we want to be. It's why I've taken the time to further explain the phenomenal tool of hypnobirthing in this chapter. That being said, while pregnancy is the perfect time to close your eyes and get free on a regular basis, you don't need to be going through something quite so life-altering to be able to alter your life. Whatever your life circumstances, you can choose to pick up that magnifying glass, look more closely at your life than ever before, and begin the journey toward the best version of yourself today. Over the years, I've developed the concept that there are root, trunk, and limb topics. We will now dig into what these mean. This is a system I have devised that makes the progression of transformation clearer to all involved. Put simply, limb topics are the issues we can see. They are the physical manifestation of bad habits, such as smoking and overeating. Trunk topics make limb issues worse. When a trunk topic is exacerbated, so too are the limb topics, such as when increased stress and anxiety result in more smoking or eating. Root topics we can't see, but they are the puppeteer holding the strings. Heal the root issues, such as lack of self-love and lack of self-worth, and the rest of the tree heals too. I approach the result my client is looking for by first determining which limb topics are holding my clients back most. Limb topics are the result of a root topic. They're the physical manifestation of a problem we can't see. Common limb topics include smoking, nail biting, overeating, unhealthy eating, not in need of weight loss per se, but in need of healthier food choices, procrastination. Root topics go deep. They're unseen, and they impact everything we do, think, and feel. They're the neurons that have been firing together for a long time and are wired together. Their connections run as deep as the roots of a redwood tree. With their reach, they cover proverbial miles inside your brain. In my experience, there are three primary root topics and they're all interconnected. Lack of self-love, lack of self-confidence, and lack of self-worth. While all root topics can be summed up by lack of self-love, I do find it helpful to segment them out into confidence, love, and worthiness because it's easier for us to see them this way. For example, one might draw the conclusions, I didn't ask for that promotion because of a lack of self-confidence, and I can see that I continually date people who put me down because of my lack of self-worth. More easily, then, I can see that I overate because instead of wanting to nourish a body I loved, I was trying to hurt a body I hated. Of course, these actions are all subconscious until we reveal them through the process of hypnotherapy. Prior to hypnosis, the answers are more along the lines of, I didn't ask for the promotion because I didn't have time to update my resume, or I dated that guy because he was so nice to me in the beginning and took such an interest in XYZ, which my ex never did, so I figured they were nothing alike. Or I overate because I loved food, and my job required me to take clients out for dinner all the time. The lies you tell yourself are simply a mechanism of rationalization. They're not actually why we do what we do. In this chapter, we're going to go over the primary factors I found in my work relating to each of the most popular limb and root topics. Before we dive into those, however, there are a few things, such as negative thinking, which are not so obviously a root or limb topic. I call that a trunk topic because negative thinking is really the conduit through which a root topic becomes a limb topic. Two other very important trunk topics are stress and anxiety. When our stress levels go up, the topics in our roots manifest more rapidly in our limbs. Everyone has some combination of the same root topics, and everyone has the same trunk topics to varying degrees, but everyone's limb topics express themselves in a unique way. We are now going to work our way backward, just as we did with the four steps to mental freedom, because it's easier to see and recognize limb topics than trunk and root topics. The latter two are buried deep underground in our subconscious mind, so we'll visit those last. How to use this chapter. In this chapter, I will cover a few of the most popular limb topics that my clients have sought hypnotherapy for. However, there are literally hundreds of other limb topics that I will not get to cover here. Please visit www.closeyoureyesgetfree.com to see the additional resources available for topics you may need help with that we didn't have the space for in this audiobook. In this chapter, I will also cover the core trunk and root topics. While I believe you could benefit from listening to the entire chapter in full, simply because something that might not apply to you may apply to a loved one or colleague, I understand that you're busy and time is your most precious commodity. If you need to, by all means, skip the sections that do not apply to you and focus solely on the sections of the tree that most need your focus and attention. Limb topics. Let's begin with the most common request I have. Now, this is not the number one reason clients come to see me in the first place. But once someone is working with me privately or have joined Grace Space, this is the topic that comes up most frequently when I ask, what are all the areas you'd like to work on? Procrastination is almost always on the list. Procrastination. The world we live in is becoming filled with more and more distractions by the day. Esteemed leaders in business have already said that our ability to focus is the highest predictor of success in the approaching decades. This is because so few people will be able to do it. This means future generations will be less able to focus than millennials. The fact of the matter is, an ability to focus will be the slight edge, the margin separating the elite performers from everyone else. Isn't that interesting? That is not at all the message I grew up with. In Chapter 2, we discussed what I believe are the biggest factors to our subconscious programming as children, which I call the three E's, but for now, suffice it to say that my entertainment and environment inputs did not train my brain to think focusing on a single task was a coveted skill I would need to cultivate in order to excel at life. While growing up, the images of success I remember from movies and TV were of impeccably dressed people who were multitasking like robots, getting everything done without breaking a sweat. I grew up knowing that admissions counselors at the colleges I wanted to go to most didn't want me to focus on and excel at one thing. Oh no, they wanted us to have great grades, to be great at least one sport, to play a classical musical instrument in a way that would make a high school band director cry. Mom, why wasn't I allowed to get an oboe in fifth grade again? To be running every club, to have perfect SAT scores, to star in the school play, and have a letter of recommendation from a previous president of a small nation. I didn't have all those things, but the pressure of knowing I was supposed to excel in all those areas did have me running around like a maniac, going from club meeting and extracurricular activity after extracurricular activity. The conscious mind can only focus on one thing at a time. The subconscious is taking in everything that happens all around you, processing it and storing it. The smells in the room, what the people behind you are talking about, the brightness of the Kindle screen, the sound of the pages turning, and so on. But your conscious mind, the one you're using right now to listen to this audiobook, the one you use throughout the day to get your work done, can only focus on one thing at a time. That means every time you're focused on a project and your phone dings with an update from Instagram, when you take a second to look at it, your progress could be derailed for as much as 90 minutes. Now, that's not necessarily procrastination. It could just be an unintentional distraction that threw you off course repeatedly. Either way, though, you can say sayonara to that deadline. Distractions don't just keep us from accomplishing our goals, dreams, and deadlines. They're expensive. According to CBSNews.com, a recent study by research firm Bassex puts the cost of unnecessary interruptions in terms of lost productivity and innovation at a shocking $650 billion. Merlin Mann blogged about the cost of the email ding. That little sound supposedly costs the U.S. economy $70 billion a year, according to The Guardian. So even if we don't have procrastination, as if it were a disease one could catch, it isn't. We all have distractions, and they're mounting. The result of both giving into procrastination and giving into distractions is the same, getting less done than we wanted. In a day, this can add up to frustration or disappointment in ourselves. In a lifetime, this can add up to deep regret and the memory of thousands of hours spent hunched over a screen. If the result is the same, what makes procrastination different from giving in to distractions? Motive. Procrastination is not a sign of laziness, it's a fear of failure. The fear of failure drives so much of our lack of initial effort. Because the subconscious wants to keep us safe, the underlying possibility of failure can be enough to keep us in our comfort zone, especially once giving into that behavior becomes a habit. Overcoming procrastination requires that a number of different areas of the subconscious be transformed or reprogrammed. For example, train yourself to begin with the biggest, most important task of the day. Bring greater awareness to the habit and turn the negative automatic switches to manual. Reestablish what feels good. Instead of the distraction prompting the good feeling, link accomplishing the task with the boost of serotonin. Reestablish the view of yourself. Reclaim your self-worth. Program yourself to be your number one cheerleader. Learn to anchor taking action now, getting started now, and ending self-deception. Instead of placing our self-hypnosis process at the end of this chapter, we'll add it here since procrastination is by far the most pervasive issue I've seen to date. Self-hypnosis process. Breakthrough procrastination. You can find the written version of the script in the PDF that comes with your program. I suggest reading through the directions two or three times so that you'll easily remember what to do once you close your eyes and get free. While listening to the audio version, you can just close your eyes, sit back, and relax as you follow along. However, please never listen to hypnosis while driving. If you're driving right now, please skip ahead to the next chapter and come back to follow along with the self-hypnosis process once you're in a safe place. Also remember, video tutorials and audio recordings are available to you at www.closeyoureyesgetfree.com. that will help you become a self-hypnosis pro in no time at all. Begin by making note of your starting stress level. 10 equals a full-blown panic attack, and 0 equals zero stress, no stress at all, the most relaxed a person can possibly be. Remember this number. Sit in a comfortable chair and place your feet on the ground, resting your hands gently in your lap. With your spine straight but comfortable and your eyes closed, take 4 deep, slow breaths, inhaling through your nose for 4 counts and exhaling through your nose for 8 counts. Let's begin. In 2, 3, 4. Out 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. In 2, 3, 4. Out 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. In 2, 3, 4. Out 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. In 2, 3, 4. Out 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. With your eyes still closed, imagine gentle roots growing from the bottoms of your feet down into the center of the earth, grounding you. Good. Imagine a color you love flowing in through the top of your head, all the way through your body, out the bottoms of your feet, and down those roots, down into the center of the earth. Flowing in through the top of your head, all the way through your body, out the bottoms of your feet, and down those roots, down into the center of the earth. Good. Now bring all of your focus and awareness and attention to the palms of your hands. Perhaps you can feel your palms tingling. Perhaps you can feel your heartbeat in your hands. Perhaps you notice a sensation of expansion in your hands. Just notice and breathe for a few moments now while I'm silent. Good. With your eyes still closed, repeating in your mind silently after me or out loud. 10. I am going deeper and deeper. 9. I am going deeper and deeper. 8. I am going deeper and deeper. 7. I am going deeper and deeper. 6. I am going deeper and deeper. 5. I am going deeper and deeper. 4. I am going deeper and deeper. 3. I am going deeper and deeper. 2. I am going deeper and deeper. 1. I am going deeper and deeper. This next step is optional. Feel free to follow along if you have the PDF that comes along with this program in your lap. If you don't, no problem, and skip this step. Take a nice, deep, letting go breath, open your eyes, pick up this PDF and lift it up into the air so that your eyes are reading at an upward diagonal angle. You can simply find the line where a wall meets the ceiling in your home. That is approximately where you want the center of your PDF to be. This does not need to be exact. If you're looking up at a diagonal, you're doing this correctly. Now go ahead and read the following hypnoaffirmations at that upward angle until you've memorized them. I am safe. I am calm. I choose to be here. I easily complete the biggest item on my to-do list. I am in the zone. Good. Once you have memorized the hypnoaffirmations, put the PDF back down and rest your hands comfortably in your lap. Closing your eyes, repeat the affirmations silently in your mind or out loud after me. Let's begin. I am safe. I am calm. I choose to be here. I easily complete the biggest item on my to-do list first. I am in the zone. I am safe. I am calm. I choose to be here. I easily complete the biggest item on my to-do list first. I am in the zone. I am safe. I am calm. I choose to be here. I easily complete the biggest item on my to-do list first. I am in the zone. I am safe. I am calm. I choose to be here. I easily complete the biggest item on my to-do list first. I am in the zone. I am safe. I am calm. I choose to be here. I easily complete the biggest item on my to-do list first. I am in the zone. I am safe. I am calm. I choose to be here. I easily complete the biggest item on my to-do list first. I am in the zone. I am safe. I am calm. I choose to be here. I easily complete the biggest item on my to-do list first. I am in the zone. I am safe. I am calm. I choose to be here. I easily complete the biggest item on my to-do list first. I am in the zone. I am safe. I am calm. I choose to be here. I easily complete the biggest item on my to-do list first. I am in the zone. I am safe. I am calm. I choose to be here. I easily complete the biggest item on my to-do list first. I am in the zone. Take another nice, deep, letting go breath, and with your eyes still closed, imagine being more productive than you have ever been until you curl up into bed tonight. See, feel, and experience yourself knocking items off your to-do list one by one. Have a smile on your lips as you imagine yourself doing this now while I am silent. Good. Now that you've spent a few moments imagining the rest of your day being more productive than ever before, imagine the same color as before flowing in through the top of your head, all the way through your body, out the bottoms of your feet, and down those roots into the center of the earth. Good. Put a gentle smile on your lips, open your eyes, stretch your arms over the top of your head, and say yes. Notice your new number on the scale. Remember, 0 is 0 stress, the most relaxed you can be, and congratulate yourself on how quickly you improved your state. Here is a simple summary of the process. Notice starting stress level from 0 to 10. Take 4 deep breaths. Grow roots. Color. Notice your palms. Count down from 10 to 1, saying I'm going deeper and deeper. Hold the PDF on an upward diagonal angle. Repeat the hypno-affirmations. I am safe. I am calm. I choose to be here. I easily complete the biggest item on my to-do list first. I am in the zone. 10 times. With your eyes closed, imagine being more productive than ever before. Color. Smile, open your eyes, and say yes. Notice new number on the scale from 0 to 10. Congratulate yourself for improving your state so quickly. Smoking. There tends to be two kinds of smoker, as far as the subconscious mind is concerned. First, there's the one who connects smoking with something or someone else that's perceived as positive by the brain, such as a cool actor, a beloved grandparent, or a favorite teacher. This is becoming less and less common as the public perception of a smoker has taken a 180-degree turn in recent decades. A hipster yoga teacher friend of mine living in Brooklyn coughed directly in a smoker's face in retaliation to the person's secondhand smoke and posted a video of it online. The post received so many likes so quickly that I was genuinely surprised. Just a few years ago, when I was living on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, all of my friends still smoked. Now, rather than smoking being perceived as cool, badass, dangerous, or sexy, it is perceived more often as a gross habit that controls the addict. That's a shift in perception, a massive reframe that was decades, if not centuries, in the making. The second most common subconscious reason for smoking is to quote-unquote protect us from something else. It doesn't make any conscious sense. Our subconscious rarely does before we start using hypnotherapy. But the idea is that if the subconscious links smoking with anything that's very important to our survival, it will continue smoking. For example, if smoking is linked to stress relief in the brain, such as getting out of the toxic office environment to go out and get some fresh air and some downtime, to take some deep inhalations and exhalations, even if they're filled with tar and carcinogens, then the brain will view smoking as a quote-unquote good thing. In my case, when I had my quit smoking hypnotherapy session, the subconscious smoker in me thought it was keeping me safe by making me look tough and unapproachable so that I could walk down the street in New York City without being bothered. When we access the subconscious mind through the theta brainwave state of hypnosis, and use something called parts therapy, where we can speak to different parts of the self as if it is another person entirely, we very quickly learn the motive behind the continued existence of the smoker. Once we understand why the subconscious believes that smoking is somehow helping, it can be as easy a conversation as explaining the physical, mental, emotional, and financial consequences of smoking to the subconscious mind. My favorite phrase is, I know you're trying to help me, and I know you're trying to protect me, but the truth is, you're hurting me. When the subconscious hears this, it takes the message seriously. After establishing how smoking cigarettes is worse for you than any perceived benefit, however, it's important to replace the habit with a new one. My favorite is to replace smoking with drinking water. Many people have a fear of gaining weight if they quit smoking. By replacing the smoking with the act of sipping water, they're still satisfying the hand-to-mouth habit, but instead of food entering into the body, it's cool, clean, clear water, which has the added benefit of flushing out toxins. We can take it a step further and anchor the act of drinking water to the feeling of calm, relaxation, and relief. A lot of smokers perceive their habit as a mechanism for stress relief. In fact, it's the opposite. The mental and physical addiction to nicotine creates more stress. Have you ever seen a non-smoker dying to get through customs after an international flight to be able to light up? By anchoring the act of sipping water to the feeling of stress relief, you're taking care of the perceived, albeit incorrect, link in the brain to smoking and stress relief, while satisfying the desire for the hands to be brought up to the mouth multiple times per day. Depending on how badly clients want to quit when they arrive, a few cut-down sessions can be really helpful before the actual quit session. For example, clients can determine their number on the scale from 0 to 10. 0 equals, I still love smoking. Nothing bothers me about it except my family and friends want me to quit, and I'm tired of them bothering me about it, and I'm tired of worrying them. At this stage, there's no internal desire to quit. 5 equals, I want to quit for financial and health reasons, but I still enjoy smoking. 10 equals, I hate the smell, I hate the taste, I hate how expensive it is, and I hate myself every time I light up. I'm so done. If you find yourself at a 5 or below, a few cut-down sessions will help tremendously. If you're a 7+ on the scale, you can likely go straight into a few quit sessions and see lasting success. Again, hypnotherapy isn't magic. It isn't about seeing if you can overcome decades of programming in one 60-minute session. It's about having as many sessions as you need to see the results you want. On average, my clients have stopped smoking with all cravings gone after 3 to 4 sessions, typically a combination of both cut-down and quit sessions. This means some quit with fewer sessions and some require more. You may need 1, 2, 5, 6, or 10 sessions to quit, and you might need a session or two down the line to keep you on the straight and narrow. In the grand scheme, that's a very small investment of time and money to be free of an addiction that's causing so much unnecessary pain. When I first started out as a hypnotherapist, a friend of mine told me he had been to a hypnotist who only provided sessions for smoking cessation. The hypnotist guaranteed you'd only need 1 session or your money back. My friend paid $500 for the session, stopped smoking completely. He had been smoking a pack a day for 10 years, and then 3 months later had a cigarette at a party when he was completely wasted. His response to the experience, "It didn't work. I guess I can't be hypnotized." Is this true? No, he stopped smoking completely for 3 full months. That's 90 days of no smoking, and then a relapse while drunk. What this means is the following. The hypnotherapist who marketed himself as a one-session wonder made clients believe it had to work in one session, which is false. Even with a 3-month success rate, the client believed he couldn't be hypnotized when he clearly had been. The effects of hypnosis target your subconscious mind, and your conscious mind helps to keep you on track. When you're impaired through the use of drugs or alcohol, the parts of the brain that were transformed during hypnotherapy are no longer running the show. Every single relapse I've ever encountered with any client of mine ever started with alcohol, pot, or another controlled substance. So what should you do? Have the amount of sessions you need in order to see the results you want. It could be 1 session or it could be 10. It will still be faster and more effective than anything else you've tried up until this point. If you happen to slip at some point in the future, come back and have another session. If you're going to the gym every day and are seeing your body transform, but then one day you decide to stay home and eat potato chips and start eating too much regularly again, do you say to yourself, "Oh, I guess the gym doesn't work"? No, to see the results, you have to work the tool. Remember that hypnosis isn't magic, but it's likely the most powerful tool for personal transformation that exists today. Avoid cop-out excuses such as, "I don't have the money for hypnotherapy sessions." Here's some tough love. Guess what? You would have the money if you stopped smoking. Waiting for it to show up before you get the help instead of allocating the funds towards the help now is not serving you. I've had weight loss clients mention this too. "I'd love to have sessions with you, but my food shopping bill is extremely expensive." How is that ever going to change without reallocating how you're spending your money up front? If there are other ways for you to stop your habit without investing money in reprogramming your subconscious mind, you probably would have tried them by now. Did they work? Private hypnotherapy sessions are typically the most effective and rapid way to see lasting transformation to subconscious beliefs and habits simply because the sessions are uniquely tailored to you. That said, dozens, if not hundreds, of people have overcome their worst habits by listening to my Grayspace recordings alone. If you live in New York City, the monthly cost of Grayspace is the equivalent to 3.3 packs of cigarettes. Getting your financial priorities in order could mean that your life looks drastically different much sooner than you ever thought possible. In addition, I've put a sample quit smoking hypnosis recording inside the bonus section of www.closeyoureyesgetfree.com. Combine this with any of the stress relief self-hypnosis processes found in other chapters, and you'll be well on your way to a smoke-free existence without any additional investment at all. Huzzah! Overeating and unhealthy eating. Weight loss sessions are among the most popular topics within hypnotherapy. I've also found that nearly all of my clients, even those who don't need to lose a single pound, are very interested in sessions that help them make healthier eating choices throughout the day. The important thing to remember here is Pavlov's dogs. Pavlov trained his dogs to salivate every time he rang a bell. To begin with, he would give his dogs food every time he rang the bell. Eventually, he removed the food altogether, yet the neurons that fired together for so long were wired together to the point that simply the sound of the bell elicited the same reaction that dangling a piece of meat over their cute little fuzzy heads had done. For all of you foodies, prepare yourself for this section. I use language that may raise an eyebrow at first, but hear me out. We're trained to eat absolute garbage from a young age. Food is anything that comes from the earth. It grows in the dirt, grows on trees, and is a natural inhabitant of this planet. Food nourishes our bodies. It's the fuel for our body machines. Everything else is poison. That's how simple I make it for our subconscious mind during my sessions on this topic. You're either eating food or you're eating poison. Why would I do this? Why would I degrade the preciousness of a child's colorful birthday cake down to the level of a big pile of bug-attracting poison? It's simple. We've been trained through birthday parties, graduations, holidays, grandma's cookies, and if you're a good little boy or girl, I'll let you have a treat when we get home, to associate sugary, carby, synthetic stuff with I'm important, I'm loved, this is the best time of year, I'm a good little kid, feelings. It's Pavlov's dogs reverse engineered. Instead of taking away the food, we've taken away the whistle. Whenever we want to feel as special, happy, and loved as we did when we were given a cupcake for our fifth birthday, we eat piles of lasagna while binge-watching Netflix. Remember when I said the subconscious mind rarely makes sense? Many eat to feel loved, or because it reminds them of someone they love, because they're bored, because there's food in front of them, or because they've developed a habit of eating. Do you think a session where I build up the delicious beauty of a Granny Smith apple but still allow room for Granny Smith's chocolate lava cake will win out in the long run? My black and white approach of food versus poison works like a charm because the subconscious wants to keep us safe. Before our session, the subconscious thinks that setting off those reward centers, the pleasure centers in the brain, with all of that sugar, fat, and salt is helping us, but it isn't. It's hurting us. For starters, it's keeping us fat, diabetic, sad, lethargic, and angry with ourselves, which ruins a few other things, such as our productivity, sex life, ability to feel happy naturally, and general health. If that still sounds too extreme for you, because while you learn to make healthier choices and/or lose weight, you still want to leave space for the occasional slice of key lime pie, listen to what my client Julia has to say about her experience. First, I wanted to stop eating junk food. I'm healthy, fit, and knew that that was not something I wanted in my body. But I seemed to have no control over the cravings. Goal one, dropping junk food. Well, this has been a topic for me forever. After the first session, I began to see my craving thought process interrupted. I wouldn't just jump into a box of cookies. Instead, I would think about what was triggering that craving and perhaps meditate through it. Now, the first week, I did have some sweets, but not as many and only one day. That's a success right there. I listened to our session several times during the week, sometimes when I was out on a run. That's a great combination of healthy activity supported by healthy choices. The second session included an element of aversion, saying that junk food was poison and helping me to imagine how I needed real food from the earth to nourish my active and stressed body. I have a stubborn little girl streak, and this little girl was part of the narrative of my hypnosis. I was going to help myself by helping my stubborn little girl show herself and myself self-compassion by eating yummy whole foods and throwing away the junk food. In my hypnosis, I cleaned out all the junk food in my house. When I got home that evening, I did clear out all my junk food. Since that second session, I haven't had any junk food. It's not that I haven't had cravings. Instead, I make a loving, healthy choice for myself. All this great behavior is happening while at work. I'm working 15-hour, very busy, stressful days. But by nourishing my body well, I'm managing the stress, and we hadn't even done the stress hypnosis yet. Julia's story illustrates that once we show our subconscious mind what real food is, it becomes natural to make the loving choice for our body, mind, and life. The voice that says, "I don't want to give up junk food, I just want to eat less of it," is the mind that's still hardwired to believe that junk food equals reward. When we share the truth with our subconscious mind that our body is magnificent and deserves to be treated as such, that real food is fuel and our body deserves only the highest quality of fuel, then saying no to gross stuff cooked up in a lab becomes the obvious thing to do. The sense of deprivation melts away and is replaced by the knowingness of, "I deserve better." Another example of how our subconscious mind can react to food-related hypnosis was showcased during my segment on CBS's hit show, The Doctors. My wonderful client Karen completely overcame her addiction to sugar, the root of which was tied to loving moments while baking with her mother as a child. The experience was full of tears and transformation. You can watch the segment and experience one of my favorite weight loss and healthy choices hypnosis recordings by logging into www.closeyoureyesgetfree.com and selecting Chapter 9. I've also included a self-hypnosis script for weight loss in Chapter 10. Aversion therapy. Aversion therapy is a tool used to create a negative association with something. I don't use it very often in my hypnotherapy sessions simply because it isn't always necessary. However, with overcoming addiction to certain foods, it can be very effective. For example, I will have clients imagine chocolate or cupcakes, or whatever their vice is, covered in bugs, to create a gross association with something that used to have only outrageously positive associations, such as happy childhood memories, birthdays, rewards for good behavior, etc., on the level of the subconscious mind. Does this mean that every time those clients see a cupcake from now on, they will run in the opposite direction, screaming in terror because all they saw was a pile of bugs or a big hazmat container filled with actual poison? Absolutely not. Aversion therapy does not create new phobias, and hypnosis does not create mirages. We still see exactly what is there. The difference is the clients will now have an aversion to the cupcakes or no desire for them at all because the subconscious association is no longer positive. Nail biting. Nail biting, oh, nail biting. It's important that a hypnotherapist never suggests a particular area is difficult to overcome because it may be very simple for you to leave nail biting in the dust. At the same time, different topics tend to require different approaches, as nothing is one size fits all in the subconscious. It's important to discuss these trends so that clients are empowered to seek out the number of sessions they need rather than assuming, as in the smoking example earlier, that it just quote-unquote doesn't work for them if one session fails to produce the desired end result. Let me put it this way. Many of my colleagues and I have noticed that most other popular hypnotherapy topics tend to see faster and longer-lasting results than obsessive-compulsive behaviors, such as this one. For many, biting your nails may seem like just an ugly habit. Recently, psychiatrists are changing the way we will view nail biters. The American Psychiatric Association's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, DSM, will classify nail biting as an obsessive-compulsive disorder, OCD. Most people are very surprised by this. They assume quitting smoking would be the quote-unquote hardest case for hypnotherapists, but why? Now that you've quit smoking, the cigarettes are gone from your life. People don't walk around with an unlit cigarette in their mouth all day, testing to see whether they will light it or not. Once the beliefs have been transformed, it's actually quite simple to remove the smoking paraphernalia from one's life, especially since smoking inside public buildings is now illegal. When it comes to weight loss, it's a little more involved than quitting smoking, simply because you still need to eat, so as to sustain yourself. We can't simply throw all food away for good as we would an ashtray. That said, it's fairly straightforward to throw quote-unquote poisonous foods away and to fill your home and lunch bag with foods that nourish your body. When it comes to nail biting, our fingers aren't going anywhere, and there's always a fresh supply of nails every few days. In that way, it might be safe to assume that the approach per topic could be determined by how quickly we can distance ourselves from all factors related to the habit. An alcoholic is advised to remove all alcohol from the house. Why live with temptation in sight? For the person who doesn't have that luxury and will forever live attached to the culprit, regular upkeep sessions are tremendously helpful in staying on track. Is it possible to stop OCD-related habits altogether with hypnosis? Has it been done? Absolutely. Clients who seek out hypnotherapy for nail biting, skin picking, pulling out eyelashes, and more have reported lasting results. Similar clients have seen results for weeks or months at a time and simply need to come in for a pick-me-up. Either way, as long as enough sessions are done, there's always a measurable improvement and palpable relief for the client. The story of my student Lisa and her daughter Emma is a perfect example of how powerful hypnotherapy can be for any anxiety-based behavior. Lisa wrote to me to let me know her daughter was struggling. Quote, "Last year, my 11-year-old daughter Emma's eyelash pulling was at its worst. She had no eyelashes left, and she was getting small sores on her eyelids from picking at the tiny eyelashes that were trying to grow in. The eyelash pulling had become an even bigger problem than the aesthetic one. She was now feeling worse and worse every time she pulled an eyelash. She continuously told us how she couldn't stop and that she was dumb and not normal." End quote. Lisa asked me whether I would be able to work with Emma on her self-esteem around pulling her eyelashes and perhaps even the habit itself. When working with a child, I find it valuable to ask the parent what, in his or her view, a successful outcome would be, and then I ask the child the same. This lets me know early on if their goals are in alignment, as sometimes the child isn't even looking for the result that the parent has booked the session for. I always keep the contents of my discussions with clients confidential, and children are no exception. So this is not something I report back to the parents. It is simply so that I will know everyone's point of reference when the work begins, and it helps me to manage everyone's expectations. Lisa said that her goal was simply to free Emma from the burden of how picking her eyelashes made her feel and that she wasn't concerned about the habit itself. Emma said that if she went from pulling 5 to 10 eyelashes per day to pulling that many per week, she would consider that a success. Emma and I then had her first hypnosis session over the phone. I recorded the session for her as it was very positive and instructed her to listen to the recording as often as possible. Lisa wrote to me soon thereafter with the following. Quote, "Within 24 hours, Emma started noticing that she wasn't picking as many eyelashes. I also noticed that when she did pick one, she didn't seem to feel so bad. And she had just picked one. She usually would pick one, feel bad, and pick more and more, but she would just pick one. She continued to listen to the recording and saw impressive results." End quote. A few months later, Lisa wrote again. Quote, "Now 6 months later, Emma has some full eyelashes back, and more are growing. But most importantly, her habit doesn't affect how she feels about herself. She is happy and carefree again and not focused on how many eyelashes she has or doesn't have. It's truly amazing. Emma has carefree childhood freedom back, and I'm so very grateful for that." End quote. Remember when I said it very well may be easy and effortless for you to leave your habit in the dust very quickly? Emma just had the one session, but had she needed more, I know her mom would have booked those sessions. Whenever I think about Emma, I tear up. Imagine if Lisa hadn't called me simply because she believed hypnosis was just for stage show stuff or that it was the creepy mind control portrayed in movies such as Get Out. How needless Emma's ongoing suffering would have been. Emma closed her eyes and got free at 11 years old. How magnificent is that? Magnificent enough for me to continue this journey until hypnosis is mainstream? Damn straight. The icing on the cake? Lisa is now studying with me to be a hypnotherapist herself. She's just as fabulous a student as she is a mother, and it's a joy to have her in class. Thank you, Lisa. Trunk topics. Trunk topics are the conduits through which our hidden root topics show themselves to the world via visible limb topics. The more someone experiences a trunk topic, the worse the limb topics tend to become. For example, the more stressed we are, the more we tend to bite our nails, eat, smoke, and procrastinate. The more negative thoughts we think about ourselves, the more likely we're willing to express our limb topics. Trunk topics are also interrelated. For example, as our stress levels go up, typically so do our negative thoughts. When our negative thoughts increase, it's likely that our stress and anxiety also increase. Negative thinking. Negative thinking is a habit. If you think negative thoughts chronically, you're not a negative person. Your brain is simply trained to think negative, heavy thoughts, and it can be trained to lighten and brighten up. That's not to be a dismissal of the crushing weight that comes with clinical depression. The pain that comes from depression is real and can result in suicidal thoughts, cutting, and painful isolation. There's a real difference between simple negative thinking and clinical depression, and it is important that you speak with your primary physician to determine where you fall on the spectrum. The good news, though, is that there's nothing wrong with you. Nothing. Let me say that again. There's nothing wrong with you. Remember the truth? You are perfect just as you are. There are simply sections of your brain where the lights have been turned off and where the electricity isn't passing through. That's it. So many of my clients experience shame about their depression, or even if it's not clinical depression, they feel terrible about thinking negative thoughts when they're actually having a bad day. I've found that clients who are especially hard on themselves are people who work in the wellness world. Apparently, yoga instructors are simply not allowed to have a negative thought, or if they teach aspects of the law of attraction, they panic that every negative thought they think is attracting a disaster. So let's clear those two up quickly. You are allowed to have a negative thought if you're having a bad day, but see it for what it is. Our lives are dictated by the lens through which we look at it. If you choose to think more negative thoughts than positive ones, that's what your world is going to look like. The same thing is true of the law of attraction. Whatever thoughts you think most predominantly will be the experiences you attract into your life most predominantly. So one slip up of, I look so fat in this, doesn't mean 50 extra pounds are waiting around the corner doing a happy dance and finally have permission to pounce on your thighs, especially if you catch it right away. Remember when I taught you what I do earlier in the book? Whenever I recognize my mind just thought a lie, an untruth that, if believed, would move my life in a direction I don't want it to go, I take a deep breath and say, cancel, cancel, to remind myself I didn't mean it and it isn't true. Then I replace it with a thought that actually serves me. Something like, my body is magnificent. Every day in every way, I feel better and better about how I look in this dress. All of those things are either true or could be becoming true. I don't say, cancel, cancel, I look hot as hell, and I drop 2 dress sizes every time I put this on. To my brain in that moment, that would be a tad far-fetched. Make sure your replacement thoughts are believable and that they support the vision and version of yourself you want to become. Does this process mean you will magically drop 10 pounds right in the moment or never think a negative thought about yourself again after practicing it once? At this point, I think we've established the snake oil marketing has no place here. This process is a pattern interrupt. It weakens neurons that are firing from wiring together and making the old negative pattern stronger while strengthening the new positive pattern. We interrupt the pattern with something that serves us, something that is true. The truth is, whatever the degree of negative thinking you may have experienced in the past, there's nothing wrong with you. Those sections of the brain where the power is out may be the result of an organic change in the brain or chemical makeup of the body, or it could be programming you picked up from one of the three E's which we discussed earlier. It could have been the result of a trauma, diet, or a combination of all of the above. You now know that hypnotherapy can help you tremendously in transforming the state of your thinking. When it comes to medication, you and your physician know the right steps for you, and you can always look into TMS and neurofeedback as well, which are powerful tools without any adverse side effects. We discussed this in Chapter 4. Stress and anxiety. According to the Anxiety and Depression Association of America, ADAA, everyone experiences stress and anxiety at one time or another. The difference between them is that stress is a response to a threat in a situation. Anxiety is a reaction to the stress. This means we can be stressed without being anxious, but we can't be anxious without first being stressed. When we experience stress or both stress and anxiety, our brain flips into autopilot even more than normal. It begins to run almost completely on the big, thick, often used neural highway of habits. This is because it takes a lot of energy to do something new. And when we're stressed, the body and mind are worried about surviving the perceived threat. This means it's all hands on deck. All available energy is hoarded for survival, which doesn't leave enough juice left over to create a new outcome. For example, I'm stressed, but I'm choosing not to smoke a cigarette. It's not going to fly. The brain goes into autopilot so that it can save energy and use that energy to survive. But stress doesn't just trigger our habits. Stress itself has become a habit. We've spoken a lot about stress and anxiety in this audiobook already, because one of the most effective ways to reach the theta brainwave state is through deep relaxation. There are other ways to do it, such as confusion, loss of equilibrium, startling the client, and more insidious techniques like torture. I use the relaxation technique more than the startling or loss of equilibrium techniques, which are popular in stage hypnosis, simply because the theatrics aren't necessary. Also, I want you to know that you're the one making this change. When you learn to relax yourself deeply into this theta brainwave state, there's no room to consider that perhaps it was because of the fancy way I dropped your arm or interrupted your sentence. You're the powerful one, and you are powerful enough to do this with the assistance of a trained professional or through self-hypnosis. We're spending even more time on stress now because it's a habit that everyone in the Western world has, and it's getting worse. The more we feel stress, the more likely we are to feel it. Although there are some appropriate situations where a modicum of stress is understandable, it's in your best interest to stay as far away from a stress response as possible. Here are two examples. Example A. You're extremely stressed out because you have the biggest meeting of the year coming up. You've been preparing for weeks, and now you'll be late because your car was just rear-ended. Luckily, no one was hurt, but now you might miss the meeting altogether. Example B. You're extremely stressed out while sitting in traffic every single day. There's nothing absolutely dire you have to do immediately following the exit off of the freeway, but you're banging your hand on the steering wheel, huffing and puffing, and making hand gestures that range from childish to obscene. Example A is an appropriate stress response. Again, until we peel back the layers of conditioning further, we don't realize that even that wasn't a big deal or a deal at all. But for many who are still beginners and a long way from nirvana, example A is perfectly normal. It happens rarely, and it makes sense. Example B is never okay. It isn't an appropriate response to be that upset every day for the same thing and to blame everyone around you who might also be blaming everyone around them. Think about it. It's ludicrous. More and more people are stressed all the time. It's horrible to feel that way, and it's horrible for everyone else to be around. I genuinely believe if we could cut overall stress levels down by 30%, the world we live in would be unrecognizably beautiful. Stress gives us tunnel vision. It takes an already egomaniacal society and makes it even more about me, me, me. I'm stressed, so the barista had better make my coffee now, faster, faster. I'm stressed, so I can be mean and say things I don't mean to my assistant or spouse or